Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. With season-long outdoor activities available, it's no surprise Southern California is thought of as a hiker's paradise. As long as you've got some reliable sunscreen, a good hat, plenty of water, and good hiking shoes, you're off to a good start in this end of the Golden State, with outstanding hiking available in both wilderness areas and near urban centers throughout the region. Like we say, beaches, mountains, and desert. And one of the best-known outdoor writers who has chronicled so many of the trails here in Southern California, especially in San Diego, is Jerry Shad. And we're very, very lucky to have Jerry Shad joining us today. Now, you may not know this, but Jerry is also an astronomy professor at Mesa College, and he is as passionate about astronomy and the wonders in the heavens above as he is the wonders at ground level along the trail while on foot or on a bicycle. A lifelong astronomical photographer, Jerry received his bachelor's degree in astronomy at Berkeley and came to San Diego to earn his astronomy master's at San Diego State. Recognized as an expert on the outdoors and trails in Southern California, Jerry Shad is the man behind the A Foot in a Field guidebook series, and while he's written well-received editions for Orange and Los Angeles counties, he's probably best known for his A Foot in a Field in San Diego County publication, for which he also served as host for the KPBS TV series of the same name, as well as the KPBS documentary, The San Diego Night Sky. Jerry Shad's written a number of additional publications about bicycling in the area's deserts, as well as a textbook for physical science courses, and continues to pen the Roma-Rama column in the San Diego Reader. We at Tree Huggers International are honored and thrilled to have him joining us today. Jerry Shad, welcome to Tree Huggers International.
And I'm delighted to be here.
It's very, very nice to have you today. Did the A Foot in a Field series come about from you taking notes on trails you would visit? Were there a lot of trails you first came in contact with when you were going to school at State?
Yes, well, at State, I was very interested in bicycling at that time. So I explored the county on two wheels. Then I sort of gradually got into hiking. I started off writing a bicycle book called 50 Southern California Bicycle Trips. Started that work in 1973, and the book was published in 1975. So that led into the same publisher asked me to do a San Diego Trails book, which was minimal compared to the current A Foot in a Field. But this A Foot in a Field in San Diego grew out of earlier books that I did. And it was my attempt at being absolutely complete about covering every trail worth taking in San Diego County. So your question is, what sort of work did I do? It was my field day to basically go out and explore every trail of my fantasy, basically. So it was an excuse to do that, and I was actually working while I was doing it and having a good time.
Well, and I know A Foot in a Field in San Diego has been through a number of printings. It was first printed in 1986. But what did you have to do for the most recent edition, particularly after the 2003 fires? Was there a lot you had to go back and revise after that?
Right. The transition between the third and the fourth edition, which was completed last year, fourth edition came out in 2007, a major revision. Because, for one thing, these fires, normally I don't pay too much attention to them in the chaparral zones because they'll come back in a few years. No sense in revising something that'll be out of date quickly. But Guimaca Rancho State Park and some of the other forested areas will never be the same. That required extensive revisions. And I added quite a few new trails in this new edition. By the way, there's 250 trips in the book now. Many of the new ones are on the urban wildland interface, the suburban cities and San Diego itself, you know, how it connects to the backcountry and the various open space preserves that have sort of come online in the last 10, 20 years. Many of my newer trips and the newer editions are in those areas, close to where people live.
Well, since we're in the middle of summer right now, can you recommend a couple of good summertime trails, some good trails that we lowlanders can go to beat the heat? Are there any that are reasonably accessible?
Not too many, to be honest with you, but as high in elevation as possible. So Palomar Mountain State Park is great, Palomar area, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, Julian. But confine your explorations to the early morning hours or afternoon after about 5 o'clock or so. It can be quite pleasant. Anywhere you are in the county, it's kind of hot. in the middle of the day. And also your comments about what to bring are very important. You know, the water, the sunscreen, the sun shielding clothing, the hat.
One of the best trails I became aware of from your publications is Hot Springs Mountain in the Los Coyotes Indian Reservation near Warner Springs. And aside from the fact that it offers some pretty interesting, if kind of bizarre, geology with some sand here and there in the higher elevations, are there some other wild spots similar to the Los Coyotes on other reservations or just places in the county that you've been taken by surprise by? Yeah.
Well, I should mention something about that particular site there. The reservation itself has been closed to hiking for a while, and this is why I took out many of the trips in the reservation in the current edition. I left in the Hot Springs Mountain trip in the hope that the Indians would open that up again to hiking use. You know, it's uncertain what will happen in the future. But in terms of, you were talking about sort of unexpected seeing sand, that is actually fairly common in the backcountry where we have these granitic mountains. The granite breaks down into its mineral crystals, creating what's called decomposed granite. It looks like sand, but it's really the debris from decomposed rocks.
It's not like those
sand
piles.
Nothing to do with beach sand.
Okay.
Although I have to say, some of those mineral grains work their way down the watercourses and end up on San Diego's beaches. Or at least they used to before dams trapped them quite a bit.
Well, you know, I was thinking of that one area in Santa Cruz. I think it's in Henry Cowell Redwood State Park. Mm-hmm. And there's sand up on top of one of the mountains there. Of course, you're right by the ocean, so it tends to make sense.
Yes. And I remember writing a book about that area, too, in 1975. Santa Cruz Mountains, actually. Basically, that's sandstone, derived from sandstone.
Let me ask you this about Hot Springs Mountain. What mountain range is that? Because it's not part of the Palomars, and it doesn't seem to be part of the San Ysidros.
Yeah, it would be generally called the San Ysidro Mountains, which is a not very well-known mountain range extending into Anza-Borrego Desert. You know, let's not put too fine a point on the naming of places, because the topography is complex in San Diego County. Some of the mountain ranges are well-defined, and others are very complex. And some map maker at one point may have labeled, you know, this particular ridge, that mountain range, and does it include the other spur ranges or whatever? Just consider it to be Hot Springs Mountain. And it's the main thing about it is that it is the highest elevation in San Diego County. A little bit higher than Cuyamaca Peak, only about 20 feet higher than Cuyamaca Peak.
Not much, just a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Indian Head Peak. Mm-hmm. Is there a trail up Indian Head accessible from Borrego Palm Canyon?
There is a route that I describe in my book that's one of many, actually. Hikers have approached that mountain from different directions. No trail. It would be almost impossible to build a trail there without a lot of dynamiting. It's just a big pile of rocks, angular rocks. You just pick your way here and there, and you get to the top by various routes. So I described it a little bit of a lengthy but not so steep route. But that's, you know, that's kind of professional territory out there. You don't want to be a casual hiker up on Indian Head Peak.
Santiago Peak and the Santa Ana Mountains in Orange County.
Yes.
This trailhead only seems to be accessible at the end of a maze of unpaved Forest Service roads in the Santa Anas. Are there some more accessible peak trailheads in the Santa Anas that lead to a similar elevation?
Mm-hmm.
How's that for a lengthy question?
Yeah, that's a lengthy one. Well, I mean, I think the most interesting way to hike up there is to, you know, rattle down the Trabuco Canyon Road, which is full of potholes and all. Park at the Holy Jim Trailhead and have a wonderful 4,000-mile gain hike where you see the different levels of vegetation and elevation. The easier way would probably be from the north, Silverado Canyon. There's a road that goes to the end of Silverado Canyon, a little community there, and then a Forest Service gate, which is sometimes open. So sometimes vehicles can drive up to, you know, pretty far up towards Santiago Peak, and then you get, then you're on just fire roads the rest of the way.
So you're probably better off stopping by the ranger station first to make
sure
you can access it.
Exactly, right. And, you know, you never know. Conditions could change. There could be fire controls in effect, you know, usage restrictions. There's storm damage in other parts of the year where it's, you know, rainy. So it always is good to check with the Forest Service. And what we're talking about here in Orange and San Diego County for National Forest is Cleveland National Forest.
When it came to writing A Foot in the Field in Orange County and for Los Angeles, that was a similar situation where the publisher approached you and said, hey, you know what? You ought to try writing some books about some of these areas.
Yeah, the current publisher, Wilderness Press, been excellent to work with. Got started on that. This was a success. And so then we moved on to Orange and Los Angeles County by mutual agreement.
In your 101 Hikes in Southern California book, You touch on some destinations in Riverside County, like the Santa Rosa Ecological Plateau, mm-hmm. Mount San Jacinto, and some trails generally outside of the areas covered in your Foot in a Field series.
That's right.
Is there any chance you might have an installment for San Bernardino, Riverside, Ventura County?
You're talking about the proposed A Foot in a Field in the Inland Empire, which has been on my mind for some time, and I've decided that I have enough of a challenge to keep track of approximately 600 trails throughout Southern California to keep maintaining my guidebooks that already cover that. And I'm at an age such that, you know, I know these are lifetime efforts, and I don't want to pile another thing on top of it.
Somebody else can write
Somebody
that
else out there is the candidate.
Well, those John W. Robinson books are really good for the mm-hmm. San Gabes and the San Bernardinos.
Right, exactly. He's a Wilderness Press author as well.
Going from the mountains to the beaches, what are some of your favorite beach trails in the area? How about Palos Verdes?
That's, of course, is outside of the county, way up there in Los Angeles. Palos Verdes, I mean, if I lived in Los Angeles in the urban area, I would take visitors there. I really like Torrey Pines State Reserve, just because it's accessible to just about anywhere, quick to get there, not too crowded most of the time. And I just love bringing visitors there, you know, even those that don't hike. I mean, it's just this wonderful resource right in the middle of the urban part of the city, or it's become the urban part of the city. It's good year-round. You know, there's always something interesting to see. Fantastic flowers in the springtime. Fantastic views in the wintertime when the air dries out and is transparent. And even the summer, you know, relatively mild weather.
What is it about the change of seasons in Southern California that allows for the air to be so much more clean in the wintertime as mm-hmm. opposed to the summertime when things can be a little hazy? When you see something off in the distance, you're almost surprised.
Well, the main thing is just that with the cooler air holds less moisture, there's less humidity. Of course, we have our smog issues, which have improved over the last couple of decades a lot, but there's still the moisture aspect. The ocean is fairly warm right now, you know, 70 degrees, and there's significant evaporation, and a lot of this haze we see is simply humidity. And the warmer the air, the more humid it's going to be in absolute terms.
Does it seem like there are more people on the trail now or less than, say, 10, 20 years ago?
Well, it depends where you're talking about. In Southern California, a whole lot more use, at least in San Diego County, tremendous use of trails compared to, say, 30 years ago, when it was just in the early days of writing trail guidebooks. With respect to national parks and, you know, the Sierra, places like that, the use is constant or maybe going down a little bit. So in a way, it's encouraging because people are spending more time recreating in the areas where they live. And that means less use of resources, less use of gasoline and so forth. I mean, we have some great stuff around here. Even in urban San Diego, we have this network of canyons. You know, they're actually ravines, but there's a proposal to have a citywide, you know, Canyonlands Natural Park. And I know some of the folks are involved in that, and I think it's a wonderful effort. Why even get in a car to appreciate nature when it's right, you know, you're right on the rim of some canyon or other if you live in most places around San Diego? So there are neighborhood groups that are, you know, kind of focusing on certain canyons, and citywide, I hope to see this, that the neighbors get together and adopt their neighborhood open space.
That's great you brought up canyons. I used to live right by Maple Canyon on mm-hmm. Bankers Hill.
Yep. I run through that today since I live downtown
you?
Now. So
yeah, one of my neighbors in Maple Canyon was an owl.
Yeah.
And it was great because I don't think there are too many mice in the neighborhood with the owl around
Enough
at
to
night.
Support one owl.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk a little bit about astronomy mm-hmm. and at least looking at the night sky. Other than places like Palomar Mountain, where there's already an observatory there, mm-hmm. are there still good places to go see the nighttime sky in Southern California without getting the old light pollution seeping in?
Well, it's an ever-increasing problem, this light pollution. There is really almost no place in San Diego where you have a truly pristine sky. Once in a while, you can get that, say, up at the top of the Laguna Mountains when the marine layer comes in real thick and shields from the Los Angeles lights, San Diego lights. You still have problems with Coachella Valley, you know, Palm Springs and El Centro, and Mexicali is now a luminous light source growing on the eastern horizon, as seen from San Diego. If you really want to get dark skies, you have to head out toward the eastern Mojave Desert, Mojave National Preserve, Death Valley. Even Death Valley is getting some influence from, believe it or not, Las Vegas, you know, which is a big blip of light over there in the east. Or you could go south toward these, let's say the Sierra San Pedro Martir in Baja California, 100 and some miles south of the border, 8,000 feet. Beautiful skies down there.
Pretty remarkable area there. Or, yeah, the Kelso Dunes. You wouldn't get any light from Barstow or anything floating
right
over there.
Right. Kelso Dunes is one of my favorite places, by the way, in the Mojave National Preserve. That being said, for most people, if they simply go out to, say, Mount Laguna, camp out there, or spend a be out there in the dark of the night, dark of the moon, they will be very surprised to see the Milky Way, because so few people, and I'm talking about my students, and I poll them every time I have a class, an astronomy class, how many of you have seen the Milky Way? Well, over 30 years of time, it's gone from about 50% to maybe 10, 15%. I mean, literally, so few people that are living in cities have even seen the Milky Way, and it must be very puzzling to them. You know, what's this big deal about the starry sky?
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe, and joining us today is author Jerry Shadd, best known for his A Foot and a Field series, particularly A Foot and a Field in San Diego. Jerry is also an astronomy professor at Mesa College and a noted astronomical photographer. How long have you been teaching?
Since 1972, as a graduate student at San Diego State. And my teaching career really, in the community colleges, started in 1975 at San Diego City College. And eventually I landed a full-time position at Mesa College, where I am today. And I teach physical science as well as astronomy. You have what are called the natural sciences, colloquially called the hard sciences, as opposed from soft sciences like psychology or sociology. Within the natural sciences, there's the biological end, and then there's the physical end. And so physical science is primarily physics, chemistry, earth sciences, astronomy.
Do you find your students get really excited about astronomy when things are going on, like the Phoenix lander on Mars right now? Is there an additional interest, or are kids even aware of that?
A huge variety. Some get tremendously interested and excited, and some could care less.
Have you ever done a field trip to any of the observatories around here and had your students see the nighttime sky and see what the astronomers see?
I teach a course at Mesa College called Practice in Observing, Astronomy 109. So every year, we're out. Sometimes we're camping in the desert, and we've been to Mount Laguna Observatory. That venue is currently closed to other school districts, but currently make use of the San Diego Astronomy Association's remote site called Tierra del Sol Observatory.
Where do you stand on the whole Pluto situation?
I'm so happy Pluto's been demoted. I'm really into simplicity. And, in physical science or astronomy, when you talk about the classification of the solar system's planets, it's so easy now. You have four planets, the inner ones, terrestrial planets or Earth-like, and then you've got the four planets outside that, the gas giants or the Jovian planets, and it's as simple as that, and all the rest is miscellany.
Do you think astronomers in 1930 were sort of moving a little too fast to name Pluto a planet? Because that was at one time Planet X, making this strange gravitational pull on some of the other
planets.
Not
really. Yes, Pluto was discovered by Clyde Tombaugh in 1930, and everybody got excited because there hadn't been a new planet discovered in something like a century. They had no idea of its size. Now we have much more physical data, and we understand it's a very small body that's part of that miscellaneous group I mentioned. That's just a reclassification. Happens all the time. Happens in botany and biology all the time. What new classification makes most sense.
And you have a website for some of your astronomical photos, which is skyphoto.com.
Uh-huh.
And you've been taking photos of the sky since you were a kid.
Mm-hmm. I got very interested in astronomy when I was 12. Well, I had a textbook interest in it, or a magazine interest, you might say, in it from a very early age. But at age 12, I started sleeping out in the backyard in my hometown, San Jose, California, which was then, a pretty small city. And I could see the Milky Way, and I got pretty enthralled about it and wanted to know what was up there. So my parents bought me a, small but high-quality telescope, and I was just absolutely thrilled the day I got that because there was a beautiful first quarter moon, there was Saturn. Next day in school, I could think of nothing else but that beautiful image of Saturn in the eyepiece. So I was hooked. By age 15, I had hooked up with my friend who was the photographer for the school newspaper. He wasn't into astronomy, but he was into darkroom stuff. So I learned all the black and white printing, and the faster films of the day were black and white. So I got into this telescopic astrophotography things. Had pictures published in a national magazine, Sky and Telescope, when I was 15 years old, and kind of been enjoying that ever since.
A couple of the photographs on your website, right when you go to the page for your photographs, mm-hmm. there's some really remarkable ones that are taken over bodies of water, looks like lakes. Is that the Salton Sea? Is that around here?
It's been kind of a specialty of mine lately. Well, and for a long time, not so much the mug shots of celestial bodies, but rather the big scene, the landscapes lit up by the moon or whatever and starry skies. Yeah, a lot of those pictures are local. Laguna Meadow has temporary lakes, which at night are glassy smooth and you can get reflections. other bodies of water. Most of my photography has taken place in Southern California, the night photography.
Mm-hmm. It seems that a lot of folks who live along the coast or within about 10 miles of the coast, it's probably wrong to say they don't have an appreciation of some of the amazing things in California. They just don't know that they're there. Do you find there's a disconnect with folks who live in coastal California?
There is a certain set of folks, particularly people who arrive more recently and they're oriented into city affairs. They may shuttle between San Diego and Los Angeles, and anything east of I-15 is tierra incognita, to be sure. Or maybe they go to Palm Springs. But then again, as far as a place of regional consciousness goes, I think San Diego is pretty far up there. I do think that we, as a rule, you know, connect with our backcountry, as other big cities do not. Los Angeles, for example, I would say psychologically turns its back on its surrounding mountains for the most part. San Diego, you know, Cuyamaca, Palomar, Anza Borrego, these are household names and places to most people. The media kind of lumps these areas into greater San Diego. So I think we're in pretty good shape as far as that goes. In that sense, we're similar to Seattle. You know, Seattle, it isn't just the city of Seattle. It's Puget Sound. It's Mount Rainier, which is part of their horizon. And they embrace that. And I think we embrace our backcountry much more than the average place around the country.
Do you think Los Angeles may behave the way it does because of the sheer size of the city? And because the city is so big, it's hard to imagine anything beyond there. The mountains you see, the San Gabes on a clear winter's day, they're so far away, it might as well be Mars.
Well, not quite. There is a fair amount of use of those mountains, not per capita, in per capita terms, I would say. In San Diego, there's a much greater percentage use of our backcountry. I would say it's just something psychological about Los Angeles. People are there. More people are struggling, I think, struggling to make a living. And commute times are longer. And, of course, that's the media center of the country. Well, one of the media centers of the world. People are into Hollywood. They're into looking good. I mean, there's other agendas that many people have in Los Angeles that we don't have so much of.
And it's so funny because right there by Santa Monica, you got Will Rogers State Park, which is such a great place to go.
And so many great places in this wonderful consortium of open spaces and parks called the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. I mean, fantastic stuff up there. And relatively little use.
Yeah, you go into Solstice Canyon and you would never know you're in the middle of the second biggest city in the United States.
That's right.
The amount of places to go see in Los Angeles County, I don't know if Red Rocks State Park up north is in L.A. County or not.
Yeah, marginally. It's near, right near the northern border. I think it's right out of the border. Yeah. I didn't cover it in my Los Angeles book. By the way, I am working on a new Los Angeles third edition. It will have 200 trips, so it has nearly as many opportunities as San Diego.
One of the most interesting areas that I learned about from reading some of your books is the Devil's Punch Bowl.
I love that place.
Isn't that a strange place?
Uh-huh. And it's a fault-torn landscape would be a good description of it.
It seems to me there aren't many parks or public areas where you can really go and have features like a fault pointed out to you. It almost seems as though Southern California doesn't want anyone to know these things are there, but if you go to the Devil's Punch Bowl, obviously, you know, something's going on around here.
Yeah, that is just a crazy landscape, unless you understand the geomorphics, let's say, behind it. But I think, you know, there is more of a consciousness even in this area. There is a park being built downtown, and the reason why there's no building being put on it is because there is a trace of a fault through there. That's going to be part of the interpretive design of the little downtown pocket park. And even at Tecolote Canyon, the recreation center and natural park, there is, you know, interpretive displays now of the Rose Canyon Fault, the strand of it you see visible in the canyon side.
Jerry, how long have you been doing the Roma-Rama column for The Reader?
Since 1992.
And did they approach you about that?
You know what? I can't remember. The fact is, other than my first book, that I had to go out and seek that work way back in the 70s, mostly publishers have come to me. I think in the case of the San Diego Reader, I was working for the San Diego edition of the LA Times. I had a weekly column, and then the Times folded in San Diego, the regional edition, and then I, you know, sent out some feelers, and I think I did. But maybe, I believe it was that, but then the publisher of the Reader said, yeah, we were going to contact you anyway, something like that.
Do you find when you're writing columns for the Reader, do you find that you sometimes go back to trails that you've covered before, or are you writing about things that are completely new to you?
Both. In fact, before I wrote for The Reader, there was LA Times and then San Diego Home Garden way back to the early 80s. It's been working both ways. Hikes described in existing books have gone into columns in a revised version, and the opposite. Newspaper columns, magazine columns have been customized into trips in my books. It's been a rather efficient way to work. What you were saying about, you know, where is a good place to hike, I just want to emphasize, it's not so much where, but it's when. I mean, I've had the most wonderful hikes in the summer in Anza Borrego. Now, is it at noontime? No. It's at the crack of dawn. I just think it's great to go out there at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, come back at 10 o'clock. In the meantime, do some hiking in the twilight, do some hiking under the full moon. Watch out for rattlesnakes. Believe me, there's many ways to enjoy adventure in San Diego County.
Just be flexible about the time you're going to go.
And know what you're doing. You know, don't go too far away from help if you're in the desert in the summertime. But nocturnal explorations are just wonderful out there.
Always have the tennis sessions.
And be careful. Bring lots of water.
Jerry Shadd, it has just been great having you on the program today. Thank you for coming by and joining us for Tree Huggers International. We'll hope to stay in touch and hope we can touch base next time you've got a new publication coming out or a revised publication coming out. Jerry Shadd, thanks for coming by on Tree Huggers International.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tommy.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. Many thanks again to author and Mesa College Physical Sciences Chair Jerry Shadd for gracing us with his presence to talk about the outdoors in San Diego County and Southern California and in the heavens above us. To see more of Jerry's astronomy photographs, go to www.skyphoto.com. That's www.skyphoto.com. Don't forget the fourth edition of Jerry Shadd's well-known book, A Foot in a Field in San Diego County, the definitive hiking guide to San Diego. It is available now, and now more comprehensive than ever. Plus, you can also check out Jerry Shadd's outdoor column, Roma-Rama, every week in the San Diego Reader. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, would love to hear from you. Let me know. You can email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. That's tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website, which is www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Or just go to the FM 94.9 homepage and click on the Tree Huggers International logo. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.